Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run down the field and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome in to another edition of 11 Personnel, the SEC Win Totals edition, where it's one of our favorite shows of the year because it gives us the opportunity to make fun of every team in the Southeastern Conference and talk just ball. It's just flat out looking at the schedule, looking at the board, and figuring out what's going to happen this season. I'm Nick Roush. He's Adam Luckett, and I got to be honest with you. Like, I was chomping at the bit to get to this until some kind of last-minute things popped up on Monday. Or hell, today's Tuesday. Classic.
Last week was a busy week after we recorded. A lot of stuff happened.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot
from
of
from the walkout on Thursday and then a scrimmage and Jagger Burton committing.
It's a lot.
All within 72 hours.
So we'll get to
72. Can't count.
We'll get to the fun of the win totals at the end of the show. But first, where would you like to start, Luckett? There's I feel like we could just like it's almost like you're at a derby party and you're picking horses. Which one do you want to go with first?
Let's do chronological, and then. I want to hear you give me some derby picks and I have derby questions for you. And we'll do that at the end.
Oh, hell yeah. All right, good. Cause it is derby week. It's my Super Bowl. So you're mixing football and derby, man. My head, I'm over here doing a Linda Blair, just trying to figure everything out. It's freaking nuts at the Roush house.
But let's start with Thursday.
So Thursday, we're supposed to meet with the defense after practice and before it begins, the boss man, Matt Jones, tweets out that don't think the Kentucky football players are going to practice today. And essentially, as players were showing up to the facility, guys saw their teammates visibly upset. Boogie Watson and Josh Pascal were the two in particular that, as Luke Fortner said, they were just – something was wrong. They were real distraught over what they had seen on television and the news. So they end up meeting together, talking, and they kind of get the whole team together in the meeting room, and they just start sharing their experiences, talking about all the hell they went through and back. Really, it kind of struck me as like a venting type session that just really snowballed. And Mark Stoops kind of walks in on it as it's happening and sits down and says, you know what, guys, whatever you want to do, I support it. So after they – kind of set out, like, here's what we want to do with this. Here's what we want to do, and here's what we want to accomplish with it. And went downstairs, they put on their practice equipment, and they walked out the other doors, the front doors of the facility, took a picture by the statues of the four trailblazers that broke the color barrier 50 years ago as a defiant symbolic gesture, kind of a middle finger to all the haters and losers, if you will, saying, we're sick and tired of this stuff. We're hurting and we're going to fight this thing together. And look at, I just hearing Josh Pascal and Luke Fortner who spoke to the media, right around, we were supposed to be speaking with Brad White. It was one of those things that, man, a couple of the things they shared, it just really cut you deep. And, you know, I'm just a white guy. I don't understand. And I never will understand what some of those guys have been through. And to hear it, it really just kind of ripped out your heart. But at the same time, it was encouraging to hear how everybody kind of came together as one in such a large group of people.
Well, I even think when Stoops went on KSR the next day and gave his statement, I think that even hit a little more closer. You got to kind of see more of who Mark Stoops' demand is, what he believes in. And basically, I'm talking about Alex Montgomery situation.
Yes, where, yes.
Where if you haven't listened, but long story short, he player gets injured, can't play, Stoops kind of sees that he might be going the wrong way. So he makes a concerted effort to be kind of a father figure to this kid. And that's, you know, father, that was Stoops' words, not mine.
Yeah.
When he states that. So, and then just for him seeing the stuff that, you know, that he's seen that this kid is going through, like getting to live it firsthand. And I think it makes sense why Kentucky was one of the first just college football programs to be out in front of the issues on both things, where they did the marches, the Black Lives Matter march back over the summer, where all the team was wearing BLM shirts. And then this one, where Kentucky was one of the first college football programs to say they were going to do something, that theirs was boycotting a practice. And you've seen some other programs follow. Yesterday, Nick Saban and his Alabama team marched through to downtown, I guess, to the courthouse in Tuscaloosa. And so I just think you heard Josh Pascal say it. Mark Stoops is a player's coach, and he rides and dies with his guys.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the thing that really struck me too, you know, a lot of people talk about the backlash they're getting. For one, it's just commendable that Josh Pascal is, you know, that dude's a fighter. If it wasn't evident when he kicked cancer's ass, he takes his criticism to chin, and he's willing to be the representative for his teammates, because, you know, he can take any of the yokels on the internet going, "Hey, Antifa, you liberal bastard, blah, blah, blah." But the thing that really strikes me in all of this is that, like, you know, they made a point, like, this isn't a political issue. This is an everybody issue, and we should all be in this together. And really, there's no better example for that for Mark Stoops. I mean, Mark Stoops and Joe Kraft, they're pals. I mean, the program is where it is because of their bond together. And I think if you were to – like Stoops is pretty Republican. I think that's very safe to say. And yet he is out on the front lines wearing Black Lives Matter shirt because it's not political to him. He's just standing up for people who need it, because he has the platform to do so. And that's exactly what they did this last week. They used their platform to make a statement, to maybe change – if they're not going to change everybody's perspective, but maybe a few people. And that's what really matters to them.
Yeah, I mean, athletes just – they have a voice, especially in college – or, well, all sports involved, but college sports too. They have a voice more now than ever. And then with the name, image, likeness coming down the chimney, that's even going to increase. So you're going to see them be more vocal with situations like this. And this is a big movement going. And a lot of times they take their cues from the professional leagues. And you saw the NBA do what they did. And it's no surprise that Kentucky, along with other schools, wanted to use their platform and make a stand.
And
but
I think it was also one of those things too, where that it was a nice, like, I mean, Fortnum was like, "Come on, are we really going to remember this Thursday practice? Like, if anyone
yeah.
or to take a day off, they can." And they certainly shook things up by doing just that. I will say though, like, it when they got to Saturday, I don't think it struck me to get things on a lighter note. I don't think Eddie Graham was too terribly happy with how the offense performed on Saturday. And it's really the first time we've heard him be at least kind of vocal, like, "All right, offense wasn't humming on all cylinders." He said today, "We moved the ball well in between the 20s, and then we kicked too many field goals." And that's kind of what you, I think, would expect at this point in the early parts of preseason practice.
I was kind of surprised to hear that, because before that, it's just been sunshine and rainbows out of camp for the most part. Coaches have been pretty happy.
But that's what Grant's there for. He's a salty old dog ready to rain on everybody's parade. And I'm going to jump ahead, and that's why I was just shocked. Absolutely, like, I was texting some other reporters. I was like, did he just say that? And that was what Grant said about Jatahn McClain. So I'm skipping ahead chronological order, because holy hell, Adam Luckett, do we got Barry Sanders in the freaking lineup? I swear to God, I've never, ever heard Eddie Graham talk about a player who's never seen the field the way that he talked about Jatahn McClain after practice today.
Yeah, it's pretty good. at least so far.
I mean, and even when the guys got really good, there was always a, like, let's be honest. These coaches learned in Stoops' early years, all right, we can't set the bar too high and let people down. We've got to kind of temper expectations. When Lynn Bowden came in, they did the same thing. They pumped the brakes. They pumped the brakes on a lot of guys. But to hear Grand not pump the brakes, I mean, I was shocked.
I think it's just more evidence that the coaching staff is so, so bullish on this 2020 class. Like they think the majority of guys are going to be hits. Like, I don't think there's any doubt in their mind. Like, most of these guys are going to be good players for us. Whereas in other classes, you're going to have, all right, this is a guy, you know, some developmental pieces and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But this class, man, you hear Grant gush about Bo Allen last week.
Right.
You hear Ernest Sanders went up and made a 50-50 catch on a 50-yard bomb.
That was a beautiful pass, too.
Now you're hearing about Jutaan McClain. Vito Tisdale is balling out. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's more evidence that the staff felt really good about the recruiting work they did in the 2020 class. And I think it's starting to pay off there on the field early. And, well, now you got the redshirt rule where everybody can redshirt this year.
Yeah. So you don't even have to worry about, right.
So you're just going to get a redo.
We've been podcasting so long, we're finishing each other's sentences. But the reason why I still remember Grant, like, it does feel like kind of similar to what he was saying about Benny Snell back in 2016, because there were some guys, and like there were some really talented guys in front of him. JoJo Kemp was a senior. You had Boom Williams making big explosive runs, and Michael Horton was this big physical back that you thought could really take a leap forward that year. And he's like, man, this freshman, Benny Snell, he's going to make me – I tell him to make me play you is the kind of statement he shares for all those guys. And it was kind of similar. I mean, it's very similar in the way that they talk about him. Other than this side, it's more of a kind of mental – like he said that McClain knows the offense as good as the other three guys, which is just like, are you – wow. You know, like this guy's he hadn't been here 7 months. So I'm excited about number 23. I'm excited about a lot of the guys. And to go back to your Bo Allen, to Ernest Sanders, shout out to UK for sharing that video. That was just, thank you. Thank you. Because nothing's worse than whenever a coach will hype up a play and then you never get to see it. I will say
that, you saw Bryce Oliver taking it to the crib too.
Yeah,
on the screen.
Your camp TJ Carter. Your camp TJ. There was one thing that I didn't want to forget about McClain. I also put my Adam Luckett contrarian hat on and thought, like, is he just trying to like get under the other guy's skin to make him work harder? Maybe that's part of it, but I still don't think you're as. I don't know what the word is, gushing to quite the degree that Grant is, unless there's something really there with Jutaan McClain. So something to be excited about.
But that's the coach who would do it, talk about his own position.
You're right about that too. Even though Grant typically is the kind of salty dog.
Mm-hmm. But then he said really good things about – we didn't hear anything about smoke today, but –
Mm-hmm.
Rodriguez, a steady hand, and AJ Rose, how much he's improved in pass protection.
No.
Other stuff's coming up too. Good things on the other backs.
I mean, they're really deep. And that's why
I don't think it's hard to tell that the coaching staff feels really good about this team.
Oh, like, you're right.
They can't
wait
to go play somebody with what they got.
No, they absolutely can't. Although there is a, like, you know, you got to – September 26th, even though we're getting closer, it does feel like it's pretty far away. And while all this was happening, Auburn, they were not doing anything. They were not scrimmaging. They were not practicing. They ain't done diddly because they had 16 guys sidelined with COVID. And Luckett, are you on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried does it make you for the opener that all these dudes from Auburn are down right now?
I haven't really even thought about it like that. Like the game would get possibly postponed. I think it's early enough where they're going to be able to recover by the time kickoff gets here. What we need to worry about is when it happens, you know, to a team 10, 14 days before kickoff, when that kind of outbreak happens.
You're exactly right. I also thought of it like it's just got to be weird knowing that, like, it's already wreaked hell through that team. Maybe there's some guys on it that, like, if I was a player, I might have some, like, kind of concerns. But I guess at this point, you're just going full steam ahead, trying to get ready for them to play and then just to go kick their ass. Because Auburn, they're still a good football team, but I do think, like, that this isn't the – they're not the kind of football team that can easily weather a setback like this, just as far as their experience and kind of what they have to accomplish with a new offensive coordinator, you know, with a weird preseason.
Well, important thing to remember with Auburn is, yes, they do have a new offensive coordinator, but Gus Malzahn is still the head coach. So he's brought in a handful of offense coordinators. He's seesawed back and forth, calling plays, not calling plays. And the offense ends up looking the same every year. They still run the same base plays. It's still a rinky-dink play-action pass game. And it's all about how you fit the run when you play Auburn. If you fit the run pretty well, you know, you're in pretty damn good shape. If you don't, they could be hanging a crooked number on you. And that's really all – that's what it is when you play Auburn. So I don't really worry. Like, that offensive stuff, like, I'm fully expecting to see the same offense I've seen from Malzahn the last 5 years.
Gotcha.
It's – with them, I think the concern is, all right, you're breaking in a new offensive line coach. You're replacing all them dudes on that defensive line. I think that's the concern, because for those guys to kind of break in and get better, you have to go full speed. You have to put the pads on. You have to play football.
You can't take a week off.
Right. And now you break – and it's even harder for them when you have to open up with an SEC team. Like, they, as much as anybody in the league, probably needed just a cobwebs game to start it off, to just, you know, break some rust off, figure out what everybody's doing. Yeah. Like, figure out if maybe we shouldn't have started this guy. Maybe we need to, you know, move this here, vice versa, something like that. That's where I think the biggest issue for Auburn is.
Well, and good for Kentucky. I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, the matchup, Kentucky matched up well with them. And a lot of it's going to be, you know, Auburn's breaking. They don't know who their running back's going to be. They're rotating about three or four guys in there who all look about the same to me. All probably good players, but nothing special, at least what I've seen yet. And your new O-line and what they want to do on offense now, they've got experienced quarterback and they got a receiver core, which could be kind of strength versus Kentucky when you consider that secondary. So I think the game matches up well for Kentucky. It's a big game for Kentucky too, because they don't ever open up with something like this. Usually right. They have kind of a get your feet wet game too, where Auburn does this every year.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, this is just a little snippet of how much we get to talk about Auburn for the next month. Because kind of on that COVID thing, you know, Graham was asked about uncertainties and whatnot. And his biggest one was, I'm just getting to September 26th with everybody. And there was something that he kind of talked about tonight that not threw me for a loop, but I hadn't considered. Basically, they got to play a game of designated survivor. The mock-up, like, who are we putting in the bunker in case X, Y, and Z happens? And now he posed just, like, a very simplistic one. Like, if I go down, who's calling plays? Well, it's probably going to be Darren Henshaw. Like, I feel like that's the safe pecking order. But those are the kind of things that you have to really play out. And, like, today on the offensive line, they had Darian Kennard at left tackle, right guard, right tackle. They had Quentin Wilson at center guard. They had Drake Jackson at guard. Like, they basically were like, all right, we're putting everybody everywhere to know all of the positions possible. And
that's an NFL tactic, too. Because in the NFL, you only get a 53-man roster.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see them early in camp move people around, see who can do what. And it's kind of – they're kind of doing the same thing here just in case something happens or even with injury. But I think on the line, like, you probably have – Schwarber probably has 8 to 9 guys, or maybe let's say 10 guys. If we had to play them, I feel like we could play them.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to – like be certain about 8 to 9. He's probably certain about like 6 guys right now. But he would try to like to get certain about 8 or 9, and that's when you see that rotation come in, as we've seen in the past in some seasons.
Yeah, and I think the first two off the bench he's comfortable with, Nasir Watkins and Quentin Wilson. I get the vibe that those two guys, Wilson can be the utility guy on the inside and Watkins can be the, you know, he can play both tackles. He's done both at Kentucky. And the same kind of applies for receivers as well, where they're bouncing some guys around out there trying to see who fits what, when, where, how. And first time I haven't heard Bryce Oliver's name in a while, because he was kind of talking about how a guy gets moved down. If they don't do well, you try this position. If you don't do well, well, then you're going down a rung to the next Bryce. Then we try again. So we've reached the throwing it up against the wall and seeing what sticks portion of the preseason. And we also have reached the point of the preseason where we're finally got some game times at him, Luckett. And I wasn't shocked when I didn't hear the CBS news surrounding Kentucky's name, but I was shocked when we found out that Kentucky's still the SEC network. Well, no, they're not even the 7:30 SEC network special. They're basically the noon SEC network kickoff for the season.
They got the Jefferson Pilot time slot.
It's like, this isn't the Jefferson Pilot time slot team. When's Missouri going to play? When's Arkansas going to play if Kentucky's playing all these games? Like, what the hell?
Yeah. I don't know how the scheduling is working, because CBS only did 6 games.
Yeah, they skipped weeks. Like, we know the first 2 weeks, but we don't know the third week. It was bizarre to me.
The problem is, Nick, SEC and ACC Network, both, they have to have those slots filled. So they're going to get, after CBS, those, for the most part, are going to get prime selections. They have to fill those spots, and then everybody else will trickle elsewhere.
One reason, too, like, it, while I was really disappointed that Kentucky didn't get one of those ESPN time slots, I really like the Joe Tess, Greg McElroy, Holly Rowe combo. That's a hell of an announcing team.
That's solid.
Yeah, I like both of those guys. You see,
Big Mike Gullick is back in college football. He'll be in the booth this year.
How did you like Mike Gullick Jr. on the FCS kickoff?
I'm still TBD on him. The couple times I've heard him, I think he's done a good job. But I need more. I need to get more from him. Because I'm trying to figure out what he's going for, kind of thing. Because I think he does bring some good X and O stuff, but there's also a Pat McAfee vibe to there, and I think that's kind of a interesting. If you can walk it's awesome. But if you can't, I think you can go wrong one way or the other. So I'm still trying to fill him out.
You're wondering if you need to tell him to get off your lawn with all this the jokey McJoke maker over here.
I think you can pull that off, I think. But, like, I think he does a good job going back to his playing days and talking some X and O stuff too. So
he's quick-witted, man. He's at least quick. Like, he'll slide some little things in there that you don't notice. But I enjoyed the hell out of that FCS kickoff game. I mean, FCS football is just such a just beautiful mess. And it was perfectly encapsulated by the graphic where – Oates of all for Austin Peay has 11 completions and 6 punts. Like, where I mean, it was just an absolute mess. You had big plays. You had the dude with the mullet, the tight end, dropping the shoulder and hitting the truck stick. I mean, that game had everything, including 2 touchdowns in the final minutes. I mean, it was nuts. It was absolute chaos.
My favorite thing yearly about the football season starting. Is that you get a game like that between 2 quality FCS teams, Those same kind of teams are playing in December in the FCS playoffs, and no one's watching. But you put it at the beginning of the year after there's been this long layoff and this thirst for college football, especially this year, it's just been even more magnified. And people are treating that like it's the greatest thing they've ever seen. Like Twitter was awesome the whole night through it, and it gave us a wacky fourth quarter with a crazy ending, both teams going down to score there at the end. So it was just fun to have that, to have college football Twitter back during a live moment was pretty fun, and just to be able to watch college football. And another thing about it, like, if you're used to watching a game like that, like if you watch the MAC at all, or if you watch late night Mountain West kickoffs because you're chasing, you're not, like, those crowds did not bother you. Like, that's what you're used to. But, you know, it's just like you don't even notice it. It's like, oh, there's five people up there and a bunch of bleachers. But
you got a mom with her lucky cowbell, right, ringing it, yeah, in the stands. Yeah, you know?
And it has no effect on you. You're just used to it.
Oh, I mean, that was great. You had a great high school finish, the game that before that, mm-hmm, that led into it. Where Cincinnati St. X decides – They convert third and short. So I don't know if the other team still had timeouts or not, but they're up a touchdown with 2 minutes to go, and they decide let's throw the ball on first down. And what happens? Oh, the quarterback gets strip sacked. Like, mm-hmm, and then they go down and score a touchdown right away. I mean,
that was right after Brownsboro team, I think, made a mistake or went for it when they shouldn't. There was gaffes on both sides in that game.
Oh man,
a lot of that's first game though, man. Oh, just playing your first game, you don't really know what's going to happen.
Well, and the thing was, too, is whenever that happened, I was, like, just doing my football thing in the chair, like, you idiots, why are you throwing the ball? Stupid, stupid. And my wife looks at me, and she's like, are you really getting mad right now at a bunch of teenagers you don't know playing football? I'm like, yes, because it's football, and I want to be mad at it. And it's not like a mad, it's just like a, I'm right, you're wrong, you idiots.
Even my wife will she'll do the thing, like, what? Like, if I yell or do something, then I'm like, then I have to go down explaining it, and then it takes me too long to explain it, and then I have to go, then I have to explain something else, and I'm just like, nothing. Don't worry about it.
It's, you know what it reminds me of, like, it's whenever, I think this is, like, an overall women thing, you'll be driving in the car, and then they just, and you think you're about ready to get T-boned, and really it's just, oh my God, look how cute this dog is on my phone. And you're like, damn it, can we figure out the scale of gasp? You know, like, mm-hmm, about to get hit by a car, that kind of gasp versus, oh my gosh, look, a cute dog on the side of the road. Like, let's find a happy in between. But hey, we're back to screaming about college football. Things are feeling more normal, and Luckett, I think we've only got one more thing before we get to real good stuff, and that was Jagger Burton committing Sunday night, which I think we kind of all expected it, especially after we found out that it was going to be a KS Bar and Grill, but nonetheless.
Did you see what Mr. Burton did to his Twitter header?
Man, what a move. Did you get worried at all when you saw that?
No, I knew. Like, man, as soon as you and Freddie interviewed him at KS Bar for a podcast, and then you saw Alabama and Ohio State loading up on OLs, like, all the signs were pointing to him coming to Kentucky.
Yeah.
So I had a pretty good hunch that he was going to commit, and especially it being at KS Bar. All signs, if it wasn't, it was going to be like the most troll move of all troll moves to go that way and then pull the rug out from under everybody.
How hilarious would it have been if he threw on that yellow Oregon hat?
And I'll give him credit. They got down to business on the announcement.
Man, that was a blogger's dream. Absolute blogger's dream to be able to have that. Kind of like the noon kickoffs. Like, selfishly, like, oh, you mean the game's over with and I can, like, watch other games throughout the day? Like, mm-hmm, fine by me. But also, it's just not as cool with having that night kind of build up. But
yeah, it's cool having the build up and the hype kind of. You spend all day getting ready for the game.
Yeah. But, like, in commitments, nobody likes waiting around. The Justin Rogers one might have been the most drawn out, like, not suspenseful, But it was just because it took so long that you got to the point of like, is he ever going to announce? They had a video that didn't work, which, I mean, the fact that the video worked at the bar and we got our technology to work, that's like, Mark, put that in the KSR history books, because that's never happened before. But all in all, things went out a hitch, and now Frederick Douglass is painted blue.
You got two more kids that are high after in that next class, 2021. Dane Key and Ty Bryant.
Yeah, a couple of legacies.
Yeah, but it was big to get a primetime offensive lineman, especially after missing on a few in Lexington in specific, and Jed Wills and Walker Parks, to be able to get him kind of adds some emphasis to the big blue wall and what you're building. Not only are you doing it on the field, but you're getting guys on the recruiting trail, especially in your own backyard.
Yeah, and that's what the big blue wall was built on, Landon Young and Drake Jackson. I mean, that's been 4 or 5 years of just steady play, and those two played a big part of it, and it helps to have fans who can identify with it because, you know, there's been other guys. Mason Wolf played a key role, but having the big names from the hometown really pops. Which, by the way, you mentioned Jedrick Wills. You see where he's day one left tackle starter for the Browns?
Mm-hmm. Man. That's what happened. Top 10 pick. You're going to play right away.
Yeah. Yeah. No time to learn.
But the building of this offensive line is kind of textbook how you have to do it if you're a program like Kentucky. A 5-star in your backyard, got to go get him, Landon Young. Another elite recruit in your backyard, Drake Jackson, go get him. And then after that, you know, it's plucking the Darian Kennard from Ohio. It's taking in guys like Luke Fortner, Mason Wolf, who were low 3-stars, developing them and turning them into solid players after years of growth in the program. And then a mix of that, where you're talking about getting the star talent in high school, mixing it with having an eye for talent and being able to develop it with some lower ranked guys and having them all mesh together. I think that's how you do it at a program like Kentucky. Like, you have to, you're only going to get so many chances to get, you know, top 200 type players. Mm-hmm. So when you get them in your program, like, it's really important to hit on them, especially guys that are local, because if you miss on some local guys, then the next crop is kind of looking at giving you that side eye. Like,
yeah,
I've seen a guy that was similar to me not succeed there. Why isn't he succeeding there? Especially when you see some of these guys that have gone to Alabama from the area, Damian Harris and Jeb Wills, they go there and have been really good. Yeah. So that's something you have to compete against. So I think that's in a perfect world. I think that's, if Kentucky's looking at themselves in the mirror, like, that's how we would draw it up on the board, how it will work.
Two young guys that I think can kind of fit that Mason Wolf type blueprint, where they're lower 3-stars, but they really turn into quality offensive linemen. I think Eli Cox from Nicholasville fits that bill. And I also think that the Wallabaugh kid who's in this class, who's I think he's a little bit higher ranked, but I think he's going to end up being a really talented player.
He's one of my favorites in this class. So I think he's really good.
Yeah, so Kentucky right now, their recruiting ranking isn't the sexiest.
But Nick, it's up there. Like, it's now with that was a much needed star power. Now it's right there. Like, it's the average star rating that you could expect it right to be like 35, somewhere in the mid 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you want to be every year. If you can be right there, and if you look at the SEC, like, Kentucky's clumped right there together with like 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And then Vandy at 14. Like, they're all in that group. And, like, they're just all those schools, like Missouri, Arkansas, Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Kentucky, they're all, like, you're splitting hairs. So if you can get to that 9th or 10th spot, that's a good spot to be. And they're not far from that. Now, they still have a lot of work to do. And I think they still got a chance at that Noah Josie kid down there in Nashville, that offensive lineman, 4-star.
Mm-hmm.
And Rayshon Benny, obviously, they're still in play for him. And there'll be some other guys that we'll see pop up here. And there'll be the commitments, too, that they might be some guys they have to recover from. So there's still a long way to go. But this class was always going to be judged on, man, yeah, what if Burton and Crowdis, could you get them out of Douglas?
And you got them. And, and especially,
and so no matter what, I don't think no matter what happens from here, this class is, I think you have to consider it a success, because those were the two guys you had to get. And as long as nothing that we're not forecasting happens, they'll be on your team next year. And I think that's going to help you get these next two out of there too. So I just think that was the goal for the 2021 class. And I think they accomplished it.
And, you know, you can't have back, 2020 classes every year. You know, you can't do that all the time. You're hitting on all of them, but you can build some momentum next year. Today, they just started, it became the contact period for juniors. They could
start. A lot of thing about this class too is the momentum never really got going
because of they didn't have spring to get kids there.
Well, that and they didn't have a big time quarterback like commit early, to get things going.
Mm-hmm.
Burton, who was the big fish in the class, took his time, which that's his choice to do.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously that would, if you get somebody like that early, that'll help you a little bit when commits start flying off the wall there in the summer. And they just could not get the momentum. Ohio, recruiting Ohio has just been weird this cycle. A lot of it's due because they've had a lot of, top 100 guys, and Ohio State just got all of them.
Right.
And then there's kind of a drop off there. So it's been a weird year from that standpoint. But I think they've piecemealed it together a little bit, and by getting, five of the top eight right now in the state of Kentucky,
not too shabby.
They're in a good spot, right?
Yeah, yeah. And Christian Lewis too. He did pretty good the other night. He had three touchdowns.
That's gonna be one. Halftime. Yeah,
81 yarder too.
He keeps balling out. That's gonna be one.
Gotta keep.
They're gonna have to work for
your Auburns and your
the Deep South. Right. Yeah,
away from them. Well, enough's enough. It's time to get to what we've been waiting for. SEC win totals. Get out your books. We're gonna make some money, Adam Luckett.
Let's roll.
We're using lines that Bovada put out a week ago. So they may have slightly changed, but our good friend SEC Mike tweeted these out on August 18th, I believe. So they're just a little over a week old. And I just kind of want to go the top down through divisions, and we can make these kind of quick hitters where we don't have
to. You want to start West or East first?
Let's go with the West. Because they're not our division. They're not, the Cats aren't there. So we'll save Kentucky, the best for last. Starting with Bama at 9. And Luckett, do you think any team's gonna go undefeated and win 10 SEC games this year?
I had Bama 9-1 losing to LSU.
Yeah,
LSU is having some type of roster turnover that we've never really even seen. It's Kentucky basketball level. Roster turnover.
And Jamar Chase is now opting out.
That's what I did with Jamar Chase and Tyler Shelvin, who is their best defensive player, or not the best singles, their best, but the best defensive lineman, who's potentially a top 15 pick. He's out too.
Oh, wow. Shelvin. Oh.
So, I wonder if Jamar Chase has been practicing and it's like, man, this Miles Brennan ain't it, brother. I'm getting out of here. Because he's been practicing for a while. You have to wonder there at LSU, and this is part of Adam's camp, so hell, our training bus, so hop on. Like, the groups LSU's in with, all of these programs have dudes that are in this situation every year where they come off a big maybe sophomore year, they enter their junior year, they could easily sit out if they wanted to, and they have 50-50 draft decisions that a lot of times go their way. For example, Najee Harris is back at Alabama. But at LSU, they had some 50-50 decisions. Thaddeus Moss, the tight end, he goes NFL. So you see this exodus. What's going on? Why is Alabama, Clemson, why are they able to – in Georgia, why are they able to get some guys to stick around? And why is this – it just makes me think, why is this happening at LSU after – you couldn't even have a better year. Why would you want to leave? But all this is happening. I just makes me wonder.
I think some of it is maybe some of those guys think they had lightning in a bottle. I think that certainly plays a part of it. Not having Joe Burrow or Joe Brady back, if you're an offensive guy, I'm sure that makes you second guess.
Certainly doesn't help lose both of your coordinators for the most part.
Yeah.
Brandon Baylor and then Brady.
and you throw in the COVID factor, and like you would have been asking those guys to do a lot in a regular season, and now they just have an excuse to go. So like that's why, I mean, now they can just go, they can go give mm-hmm. get their Monopoly money from Odell Beckham yeah. and just cash in now. You know, yeah. why the hell not?
Well, it wasn't like they decided early though. They like went, they went through the hard stuff. Like you're going through camp, like that's the hard part, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
like why are they making this decision? I just think it's interesting. Like it just makes mm-hmm. me think, what is something more, is there something more to there than we're seeing right now? So to answer your question, yes, I think Alabama's gonna run the table.
Oh, okay. So you've got the over. I'm just on the yeah.
I wouldn't play that, but that's my pick. Like if you made me pick a side, yeah. Over or under, I'm going to lead towards that over.
Yeah. And I, even though this is the kind of bounce back Saban year that he's notoriously good at, I'm taking under. I'm just the notion that nobody's going to go 10-0. Yeah. I'm just going to stick my guns to it. The number we had for LSU was 8, and I'm sure that's got to be like 7.5 now.
If you could lock it in at 8, that under, I would go ahead and do that.
Even though they do have a pretty manageable schedule. That's what
I'm
about to
get. They're still going to go, I think, at least 7. Or they'll have a really good shot at 7-3, a puncher's chance at 8-2. Probably come down to that A&M game at the end. Because yeah. that schedule is awesome. And they're still uber talented.
They really couldn't have. I mean, as long as you keep the Pirate at bay in that first game, I mean, you don't play anybody till week 4, Florida. You got Auburn, a bye, Alabama, and just finish up your Texas A&M. I mean, you 7-3 is very, like, I feel like you're not even asking much at that point to go 7-3. So getting to 8 yeah. wouldn't be too tough if it's at 7.5. But I would still just worry about you worry about the turnover too much to touch it. So I would stay away from it as well. I'm taking the under 8, and even if it's 7.5, I'm probably taking
yeah, but
calling them 7-3.
Thing with LSU is where do they get upset? Because you look at these opponents like Vanderbilt, no. Missouri, no. Mississippi State, maybe if it was later in the season, but that's probably a little too early mm-hmm. for Leach to have that thing humming. Plus, it's at LSU. Right. South Carolina, right. no. At Arkansas, no. Ole Miss at home, maybe at the end. Maybe that's the one, but they get them at home. And then the other four games, you know, Alabama, A&M, Auburn, Florida, three of those are on the road. But you got to think they get one of the three. And if they get one of those three, that's a 7-3 season.
Yeah. So, I feel like 7-3.
As long as things don't go wrong, 7-3, you should feel pretty good about that. And if you get it, the total, that's why I expect that total probably to get to 7.5, 8. It'll stay right there. I don't think it'll drop down to 7. If it drops at 7, just go ahead and play that over because you should feel pretty safe that they're going to at least get 7.
We talked a little bit about Auburn earlier in the podcast, but I am just bearish on, I think that's the right word, on the bullish. Tigers this year. Well, bullish is like you think they're going to be good. I'm the opposite. Yeah. Suck it, Auburn. Because
yeah, this is my favorite. This is probably my favorite. Well, it's not my favorite one, but it's one of my favorite ones. So
they're at 7, and because I think when you go through this, you want to just write down your walk-up wins, and I'm mm-hmm. counting up 1, 2, 3, maybe 4, and that's counting Mississippi State as one, and I don't know if you can do that. They don't have just a lot of just guaranteed wins. They've got a ton of toss-ups and maybe just downright L. So based on that, based on all of the turnover on the offensive defensive line, I'm taking the under 7 with Auburn.
Yeah, Nick, I got them at 5-5. I've got the under 2.
Yeah. And
when I even drew that out, that's even with a win against Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, because, like, Tennessee, as much as we hate them, like, mm-hmm. I mean, they've got tough sledding here. And
here's the thing. Between the cross-divisional games, that's not counting Georgia. Just Tennessee, Kentucky, South Carolina. You know, I think at best you'd hope for 2-1 there.
Yeah.
And so then you have to go to Georgia. You have to go to Alabama. Those are probably losses. Mm-hmm. So that's 3 losses right there. The total 7.
Yeah.
So you're sitting at 7-3, and you still got games with LSU at home. You still got to go at Ole Miss. You still got to go to Mississippi State, and you host Texas A&M. So I don't think you're running the table there.
No.
So I feel pretty dang strong if that number's at 7 to play the under. I think it's 5-5. They're looking at 5-5, 6-4.
This is a lock it. Lock it up.
Yeah.
Get that 7 while you can.
I guess I'll need to do it next week, but I'll release my best probably 6 or 7. I'll go through everybody. Maybe I'll be going through a Big Ten one too. We'll see about that. But yeah, this one will be on there. Auburn. Give me the under 7 or 6.5, whatever it is. As long as it's 6.5, 7, I really like it.
Texas A&M. I think I like this one a lot too. Like it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
And this number is at 6. Like it. Which one are you taking to this? Are you on the under or the over?
Yeah, I'm on the over. I think A&M finishes second in the West.
Oh, man, I am too. And it's one of those things where from the – like a lot of these teams you identify with the quarterback, and Kellen Mond has never really overly impressed me. But Texas A&M still has a lot to offer. And the way I look at it, when as far as their lock-it-up games, to hit that over, all you have to do is win one game against LSU, Florida, Bama, and Tennessee. Do I think they're going to get Bama? Probably not. But the way that things are going, LSU, the wheels, you know, they kind of seem shaky. Tennessee, they're kind of similar in that they're pretty deep, but quarterback play can be shaky. So I think that you can get one out of those four games and go ahead and get your over.
I think the LSU, the news of this roster attrition, I think it helps out A&M the most because I think that game leans more towards them, especially with it being at home. Obviously, Alabama's going to be tough, but you avoid Georgia. You get Florida at home. And then they're just more talented. They've got more talent than all these other teams. At Tennessee will be a little tough, but I just like how it shakes out for them. I think this is the year Jimbo kind of gets his big season, and I think they win 7-8. So, locking that over.
Yeah, and is it because maybe they drew Vandy? Or are we just going to give overs to all the SEC West teams that drew Vandy? Maybe. Yeah,
that could be the swing card there for sure.
Which these I love the next two.
But the A&M's weird schedule though, because they could easily start 1-2, and then all we're going to hear is how Jimbo stinks. But then you look at the schedule, they could win out too. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. But hey, just win one of those early ones.
Right.
Go ahead and upset Florida.
Yeah, but if you win one of those, you're in a really good spot.
Egg Bowl time. All right. We got Ole Miss 3.5. A full game better than Mississippi State at 2.5, which kind of surprises me just from what Joe Moore had left in the cover for the Bulldogs and how things ended last year. Which one would you like to go with first?
Let's start with Lane.
The Lane train.
Yeah. What's the number? 3.5?
3.5. And here's the guaranteed wins that you have for Ole Miss. Arkansas, Vandy, and South Carolina. Yes, I'm counting the South Carolina game. Suck it, Muschamp.
Two of those on the road, though. I mean, they're the worst two teams, but.
Yeah, they're the worst two teams. If you get some semblance of normalcy, you can almost lock those up. And the reason why I'm on the over is because Mike Leach, for as fun as he is, he's terrible against his rivals. Absolutely dog crap against Washington and the Apple Cup. He's traded his apples for eggs, and I don't think they're going to do him any favorites. So I've got Ole Miss in the over.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take it to the bank because I think you're going to get points no matter what with this team. They're going to give up a lot, but I think you're going to get points. Matt Corral and Elijah Moore back there slinging it around.
Just in a vacuum, I think Ole Miss has a better roster. And then I like that they get Florida and Alabama out of the way early. Just get those losses out of the way. Take your lumps. Yeah. And then kind of build something. You get Vanderbilt before the bye, which is nice. And you get South Carolina after the bye. So at 3.5, I would lean over. I think they can get to 4-6. I think they got a puncher's chance at 5-5.
Well, and they can also – I mean, like, they could upset an Auburn at home, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big spot for them, I think. Auburn at home. And then, you know, late in the year, it's what do you do against at A&M or at LSU? Can you kind of give them one of them? They'll give one of them teams a scare, I would think, at the end of the season.
Yeah, and that's Lane Kiffin. That's Lane Kiffin ball for you. So I like them at 4-6. Now, Mississippi State, this is a little bit different story, but here's something. I mean, the SEC really did hand Mike Leach a nice little platter where in their additional games in the East, they picked up Vandy and Missouri, both at home. I mean, just write them down, right? That's two wins, and they already play Arkansas at home, and all you have to do is get to three? Like, come on. Mike Leach, you got to give me three wins with KJ Costello, Colin Hill, and Earl Thompson on defense. There's enough pieces there that you can get to three wins with this schedule. I don't care if it's a 10-game SEC schedule. Mike Leach can do this in year one.
This was a total, I think, that opened at four at some other places, and it moved fast down to 2.5 it's at. You look at their schedule, man, they have to go in separate months. They have to go to LSU, to Alabama, to Georgia. So waiting on them in each third of the season is just a gauntlet, just an automatic lose. You get, you know, confidence, potential breaking game. So when I just look at it, man, like 2.5 is probably the perfect number. Like, I think it's 2-8, 3-7 is what they're looking at. So it's really how you feel. When I wrote it up, I had them at 2-8. So, I mean, I guess I would lean under, but I mean, it's a stay away there at 2.5 for me, because I think it's pretty good shot. It's either at 3-7 or 2-8. I think it's going to be a long season for them. I think missing spring ball has the biggest impact on them more than anybody else in the league, just because it's just brand new. I mean, it's brand new everything on both sides of the ball. Going from, you know, a multiple kind of 3-4-4-3 to this weird, funky 3-3-5 stack on defense. And then offensively, you're going from, you know, RPO everything with Joe Moorhead to, you know, running meshes and four verts and just doing nothing but passing with Michael Leach. It's just a total change, I think. And I think that when we get to November, December, that's what we're going to be talking about. Like, it was a year zero situation for them because of everything was at play for the Bulldogs.
They undoubtedly have the most question marks, but, like, come on. Arkansas and Vandy, take care of business and then just beat Missouri or Ole Miss. That's all you got to do to hit that number. And I have enough faith in the power to rally the troops. And if I was an Arkansas fan, you get to play Missouri. So you got that going for you. Rivalry, the border war, right? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, they got a trophy and everything.
Oh, man.
For Arkansas, like, they'll get somebody. They'll get somebody, but this thing is murderer's row. You can't get a more daunting slate Birmingham put in front of the Hogs.
Yeah, 100-year check must have pissed somebody off in Birmingham. Like, there's no other explanation. it's a stupid schedule, and they didn't even throw them Vandy.
Yeah, you have to screw somebody, and Arkansas was who they decided to screw.
Might as well screw the pigs. All right, on to the SEC East. Georgia has the highest over-under, the line set at 8.5. Adam Luckett, where are you feeling on the Georgia Bulldogs?
It's perfect. I got them at 8-2. So,
yeah, I'm the same way, because
laying that over at 8, that's tough, especially with an Alabama road trip on the schedule.
An Alabama road trip, you've still got the cocktail party, and I know they've had Florida's number, but
I think that's a record
for Georgia.
If you think they're going to win the cocktail party, though, I could see how you could talk yourself into the over. You're just not leaving yourself any room for error.
Especially
for me, when I pick season totals, I want to have wiggle room. Like, I want to see, like, I want it to be over the total, and then I want to have, can I give myself a game or so in case there's an upset or injury or who knows what else. And with Georgia, with this total, that's the perfect number, the 8.5, because it's going to be 8 or 9, in my opinion.
And this is one of those, the way their schedule sets up too, it could be derailed by week 4. Because even though they start with a cupcake at Arkansas, Auburn, Tennessee, Alabama, 3 in a row. And you got the rivalry aspects in two of those three where things can get a little wonky. This could be Tennessee's time to show the world that they're back. There's a lot of just – it can get really hairy there, and I think that's why you got to stay away from it or take the under.
The schedule, I mean, wins are baked in after the bye because they get a week to prepare for Florida, but the last four they're going to be heavy favorites in. But these sandwich spots, like you talked about, Tennessee, Arkansas the week before rivalry Auburn, Tennessee the week before the rivalry Alabama, Kentucky the week before the bye week where you're getting ready for the cocktail party. Like, those are – in two of those games, Kentucky gets them on the road. That's the only spot they – well, like Arkansas, excuse me. But Kentucky gets them – I think Kentucky gets them a great spot. I think they're going to have a really good chance to get an upset there.
And you're breaking in new quarterbacks. You do have a real new offensive coordinator. Stay away or go with the under.
And their team, they just lost a receiver who had a chance to be their second best receiver. Oh, I think it's Dominic Blaylock.
Yeah, yeah.
UK tie there. His brothers played here.
Yeah, and one of them was on like an MTV reality. No, Bachelor. He was on the Bachelor. JD Harmon was on.
So losing him, I think hurts you. That injury bug. It's popped up there in Athens with the quarterbacks going through some issues, and then losing him, I think, is a big one. That's just something to keep an eye on. They still got some other dudes there, but, you know, another injury or two at that receiver position, and then they're really thin, and then they might be forced to kind of go to ground and pound.
This Florida team, the line is at 7.5, like it, and – I want to pick the over if I know who I'm getting. So I kind of want to wait till the season gets a little bit closer on this one, because when you look at the baked in wins, I mean, they start pretty slow, and you got A&M and Mizzou or A&M and LSU back to back.
That's likely a split.
Yeah. You're likely splitting those. And then you've got Georgia, Kentucky, Tennessee, really. The way that I kind of looked at it is if you beat Georgia, Kentucky, or LSU, you can reach your 8-2 mark. You just beat one of them. And I think they'll get one of those. And that's me being bullish on Kentucky. Even though the Cats, like objectively speaking, have given Florida fits, they've still found ways to win as of late. They should be able to get to that. But that's what we mentioned earlier with the Trayvon Grimes and Kadarius Toney and all these players. Like, I know they're back at practice, but that's just a situation that I'm careful, and I'd probably end up staying away. But if you made me, I'd take over 7.5.
I think 7.5 again is the perfect number. For me, looking at Florida's schedule, all right, Nick, remember the Georgia games in Jacksonville. Who's Florida losing to at home? Like, if they beat LSU at home, they get Kentucky in a really good spot because it's a week after Kentucky plays Alabama.
And they got Vandy the week before.
So getting LSU at home, you kind of that cleans up your home slate. And depending on how you feel about the cocktail party, you can talk yourself into it either way. I think they're going to lose, so that's why I had them at 7-3. But I think if you think they're going to clean up at home, which the schedule kind of sets up for them to do that, I think it's very easy to talk yourself into that over. Get them getting 8-2, especially if you think they're the best team and they're going to win the division.
And I could also see some weird scenario where Tennessee makes the season finale a bowl game and kind of wrecks it, though. Tennessee's a weird team. We'll just go to Tennessee.
I'm excited for that game. I think that's going to be a cool game to end the season.
Yeah, I think it will as well. Let's skip Kentucky. We'll just save them for last. Tennessee, they've got it set at 4, which Kentucky actually a little above them at 4.5. And I feel like they have almost 4 automatic wins already on their schedule, with South Carolina to open the season, Missouri at home, Vanderbilt, and I guess I'm counting Texas A&M, or no, Arkansas, excuse me. I missed that one. So I feel like they've got 4 pretty gimmies right there. And then at that point, you're just fishing for them to, I mean, you just need one more win. It shouldn't be too much to ask, even though you've got all of the top teams in the SEC all in their schedule.
Nick, this total stinks, and I mean it stinks out loud. Why is this only at 4? Like, why? Like, we've heard about Tennessee all offseason. How, like, they're the, you know, they're the they're the next in line, they're this, they're that. Why is this line at four? That it just doesn't make any sense to me. I've got to clear over two games, but this makes me think, what am I missing here?
Does Vegas know something about their quarterbacks?
Is there something about Tennessee that we need to know? I mean, the schedule is brutal. You have to play. Is
going to hit the fan? Something happening there?
Yeah. I mean, take out LSU, and then you're playing out the top probably other 7-8 teams, you know, when you're looking at Georgia, Kentucky, Alabama, Texas A&M, Auburn, Florida. So whatever that math is, that's, you know, you're playing the best of the best outside LSU. But, man, I just don't know. The South Carolina game is huge for both teams. With South Carolina, Nick, I don't know if we want to get on our bus right now.
But let's get on our bus and go to South Carolina. And I'm just going to tell you before that I'm taking the under. Come on. You think I'm going to do something nice for Will Muschamp?
South Carolina has a problem at the skill positions. Their like running back Marshawn Lloyd, which we talked about, out for the ACL. Their other running backs, it's just, you know, you don't know, but it doesn't look very promising. At wide receiver, they've got Shy Smith, who's played for them for a little bit, it's pretty good. But after that, they've got a kid by the name of Luke Doty, was a dual threat quarterback out of Myrtle Beach. And when you see Luke Doty, think kind of like Jake Locker, okay?
Okay.
Like this really good athletic quarterback. Can play multiple positions if you need him to. Runs a really fast 40. They're using him he's practicing at receiver right now. And he's going to play receiver for him. And he's going to be their wildcat quarterback. Like, they're going to, like, make a concerted effort to get him 5-6 touches a game, sounding like. They're in trouble at wide receiver. They're waiting on a graduate transfer waiver. It was a kid that I think transferred from, like, FCS or Division II. That their skill position, they're in trouble. Like that this offense quietly could be really bad this year. And I don't think people have really recognized it yet because of the Bobo hire and whatnot, but mm-hmm. The talent there is, it's just not looking good. And then you bring in, you know, a new play caller. Like Bobo's going to have a magic wand to make some stuff happen there this year.
With a guy like Ryan Helinski, who
I'm not even sure Helinski's going to be a starter.
Well, it's kind of the point. Like, who's the guy lean to? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it just – suck it, Muschamp.
Right. And 3.5 is probably the right number. To get there, they have to upset somebody, though. Like, you're giving them the win. You're giving them the win against Vanderbilt. You're giving them the win against Missouri at home. At least I am. And then it's like – but that Missouri Ole Miss, like, they'll split those. Let's say they split Missouri Ole Miss, that little trip.
Okay.
So they beat Vanderbilt. So that's two wins.
Yeah.
So fine. Can they upset? Can they upset Tennessee at home? Can they upset
Kentucky.
Auburn at home, which is in a good spot? Can they beat Kentucky on the road last game?
Yeah, no, I'm not buying.
They get A&M at home off the bye. There's some chances there for it.
But you're fishing for two wins, man. You really are to hit that over. Like, yeah. I don't even think it's close.
Yeah.
That's partially my hate for South Carolina, but like still you're really fishing for some wins there. And the thing is too, like it when you talk about talent, like at least, you know, Farrell Cooper or what's his name is with the 49ers now.
Debo.
Like
Brian Edwards too, is with the Raiders.
Yeah. I mean, like,
their all time leading receiver. He started for 4 years and was good for them. He's gone. All those guys are gone.
You had a couple guys who were like, man, they could go off and just change a game, and you don't have anything. So
it's the most Muschamp thing ever to finally get like a proven good offensive coordinator, and he's got nothing there right now. Man. You know, you lose that offense was going to be built around Marshawn Lloyd. Like they were going to run that kid to wherever he could carry him. Like he was going to carry that offense, and losing him, you know, people you don't follow recruiting or whatnot, if you're not that into it, people are just kind of not talking about it. That was a huge loss.
Yeah.
Like that kid was going to mean everything to their offense this year, in my opinion. And you lose him and get new coordinator, you got questioning the quarterback, receiver is a shrug emoji. It's just, I don't know. I think it could get ugly for them.
Missouri, we all know that what I think about our good friend Eli Drinkwitz. Their line is set at 3. And when I look around, you can give them the Vanderbilt win, as we've given everybody. And they've got that rivalry with Arkansas. So, you know, maybe yeah.
– Both at home, too.
Yeah. So, okay, now can you beat Mississippi State to end the season to get to 3? Can you beat South Carolina down the stretch?
There are opportunities for them to get to 3, potentially 4.
See, they really start off with a punch in the face, Alabama, Tennessee, LSU.
Mm-hmm.
You get Vandy, and then –
Well, really the 4 out of the first 5 really yeah. tough.
So, just winning one you feel okay about. Then you host UK before a bye week.
I think they get UK at a good spot too, right after they play Georgia and what's going to be I'm projecting to be a monster game.
Right, right. So, and Missouri's put UK to sleep before. We saw that the last time they were there, and the 2 times before that. That field has a way of putting UK to sleep. So, you do have a chance there, and then it's a bye week, and you're like, okay, after Georgia, we've got 3 winnable games here. So, I think if you want to buy into the nerd, you can, but I'm not going to. I'm taking the under.
Yeah, I had them at 3-7.
Yeah.
So you look at that that 3 number is perfect. So I would probably stay away from it.
Ooh, Vanderbilt 1.5. My question to you, Adam Luckett, could Vanderbilt beat Frederick Douglass?
Yes, they could beat Frederick Douglass.
I don't know. We need to make this like could. Could Kentucky
beat the Wizards or whatever it was?
Yeah. It was back when the Cavs were really crappy. But,
right.
I mean, my goodness. They had somebody opt out.
Could Alabama beat the Jaguars?
Vandy had an offensive lineman opt out who transferred there from Michigan.
Michigan, and Steven Spinellis.
Vannetti told me this, and I don't know if I can believe this, but do they only have 4 offensive linemen on their roster? That can't be true, can it?
They've had 4 opt out.
Oh, okay. I think that's where you got a flip flop. But yeah. My God, poor Danny Clark.
Well, Nick, here's what's going to happen. This is just Adam reading in between the lines. Got a practice report, which, by the way, like I've been trying to find a beat writer to follow for like each team so I can keep up to speed. I can't really find it anymore. Like. I don't know where they're at.
Just follow or they don't Stillman.
Get covers.
Him and Derek Mason have a nice little rivalry.
So Chad Bishop, who used to write for
WKU,
he used to be a beat. Yeah, well he works. I think he wrote for a Vandy rival site, and then they hired him like their athletic. He writes for their official athletic website now.
Okay.
So he's a part of the communication team that I don't think got fired.
He's the one guy that they left.
Well, he had a practice report that kind of. Basically, it talked about the quarterback battle and didn't really say he was ahead, but it gave a quote from the offensive coordinator. And pretty much what the story said, 2 guys were in for spring. This true freshman from Texas was one of them. And the quote was like, I really like what I'm seeing from the true freshman. Ken Seals is his name. So this kid, they're going to run this kid out to start. And I just hope,
poor kid.
I hope it doesn't ruin him. Because what it seems like, this kid's got some potential, but they don't have much around him. And the opt-outs have hit probably the hardest date, but they did have an opt-in. Dimitri Moore opt back in.
Yeah, he opted out and he re-opted in.
Mm-hmm.
He re-opted back in. And
but you look at a Vandy, they're going to be like a 2-touchdown dog in like every game.
Yeah, it's going to be bad. And S&P Plus came out with
1.5. That's just no. They could get 1, maybe, but 1.5. That's reaching a little bit.
I'm actually going to look up those SP Plus lines real quick that they put out today because I'm wondering just how far down the list you have to go for Vandy to. I mean, they've got to be.
I did. I calculated it up before the SP update.
Yeah, in which Kentucky was ranked in the top 25. Kind of nice to see the analytics showing them some love. Oh, my goodness, what did I just – oh, ESPN. I hate ESPN's website so much. You can't just control F, find stuff. It's miserable. They got to autoplay videos. It's as bad as USA Today. Vanderbilt's ranked 110th. They have a negative 11.6 SP+. So Kentucky's a 20-point favorite, 21-point favorite okay. already.
Yeah. I can read them out to you all right now. this is before, this might change by a couple points, but this is what I had projected lines. Vandy plus 31.5 at Texas A&M. LSU at Vandy plus 29. Oh. South Carolina at Vandy plus 15.5.
Oh, Jesus.
Vandy plus 15 at Mizzou. Ole Miss at Vandy plus 15.5. Vandy plus 16 at Mississippi State. That's two-win SEC Mississippi State. Vandy plus 22.5 at Kentucky. Florida at Vandy plus 29. Tennessee at Vandy plus 20.5. Vandy plus 36.5 at Georgia.
My God.
So you're a two-touchdown dog in every game. It's just – it's going to be brutal. I feel bad for them. I think they're in for a brutal season.
You know who's not in for a brutal season? The Kentucky Wildcats. Because mm-hmm. I've seen the our friends at the Cover 3 podcast use 5.5 as the number. The number 4.5 seems probably more likely to be used, and that feels like just hammer that over. And I don't know if this is a – oh, they're just doubting UK. But I do think there is an optics standpoint where Vegas is just in the toss-up games, they're still not really giving it to them. 5-5 is the 4, right? Like, where? How do you even get to 4?
Yeah, I feel very strong about 6-4. So if you're getting a game and a half wiggle room, take it and run. I feel very strong about them getting the 6-4.
Hammer down. I mean, the reason why I love this is it's been 3 years straight, maybe even 4 now. I got into college football gambling only because the win total was so easy going into 2018. It was like 5.5 or 6. I think it might have been 5.5 or 6.5. I don't know. It was absurdly low, and they ended up winning 9 regular season games. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to open an account with Uncle Bo because this is easy money. And I feel like it's happening again at 4.5. My question for you, like it, what's the highest you would find it that you wouldn't touch it over? Would you still go with it at 5.5?
Yeah, 6. 6 is kind of – 6.5.
And I don't even I don't think you could find that absolutely anywhere.
6.5, it would make me think under.
But, man, I don't think you'll find that anywhere else. So go ahead – pick the Wildcats, be a homer, and just enjoy all your winnings
at the end of the season. We are, I think, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019. I think the total's gone over every year.
Yeah, yeah. So we're
so you're, big Stoops. Since this bowl streak started, that's the one number against the spread that really hasn't adjusted. Kentucky's kind of been cash on is the season totals over.
Cash money. Lucky, are you ready to cash some Derby tickets?
Yes, Nick. Questions for you.
Yes, hit me.
In the most common way possible, can you explain what a wheel is to me? Because I see it every year, and I'm like, that sounds cool. I would like to bet it. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Let me read about wheel, and all I'm thinking about is wheel routes.
Yeah.
Then the race comes, and I'm like, well, I probably would have lost that, but it'd been cool to bet a wheel. So tell me, what is a wheel?
So it's really just a fancy way to phrase how you're spreading it out in your exotic bet. So I don't think you really need to use it when you have your phone to bet on. And with KSR, if you use Naira Bets, you're getting $25 for free to play with if you use the code Derby25 when you sign up. But free plug now, Bets. You're welcome. But essentially, when you click on trifecta, you can wheel one horse to come first, second, third, but not every single one is kind of like that. Like you're not putting every single horse that could come in second.
So you're boxing them, but you're putting like separate boxes around them, like specific boxes.
Right. You're only kind of boxing that one horse per se. It's just a fancy way to say box. The one that it took me a little bit to figure out was key. In keying a horse,
key, I've heard that one too.
You're going to want to key in the Kentucky Derby. You key tis the law. Yeah.
Over, like if you know for sure one person is going to win, you would key them?
Yes, yes. Okay. So you're going to want to key tis the law, and then you sprinkle in some longer shots. And the two long shots that I really like are on the inside rail, and that's Enforceable and Max Player. I'm not going to get into a variety of reasons, but basically they're closers. And the way this race sets up, on the outside, you've got all the really talented horses, and they're going to break fast and try to get to the front. And when you have something like that happen, horse folks say the pace just broke down, the race broke down. And that's when things can get wonky, and you can have these closers come from behind. And the thing with Max Player, he's got a new jockey. The old jockey used to piss me off because I really like this horse. He's ran against Tislaw a few times, but the old jockey, I think it was Bejarano, used to take him wide down the middle of the track. Like, you can't go from seven wide and catch Tislaw. But if Ricardo Santana on him, I think he can weave through some traffic on the inside and make some noise. So I like those as some long shots. New York Traffic, he's the kind of front runner that always comes in second to Tislaw. So maybe him as well. But it's kind of disappointing, though, Luckett, that I was thinking this was going to be some loaded field, and it's really not. The delay has not attracted more talented horses to join it.
Is there a bigger long shot you think has a really good chance to come in the money?
Yeah, I think that's your max. I mean, there's 12 of the 18 horses at 30-1 or worse.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
So there's chances that that trifecta's going to pay off a good bit.
Oh, yeah. It's going to pay off something crazy. Even though the winner, Tislaw, who this is going to be the heaviest favorite, probably in Derby history. So
yeah,
prepare for that. But one thing you do not do. We got a lot of Catholic school friends. There's a lot of Notre Dame fans. Don't bet on South Bend. Just like you're throwing your money away if you're betting on South End. Now, me saying that, the horse is going to come in the money and the trifecta is going to be huge. But like, I can't understand why anybody would bet on that horse aside from the name. So take that for what you will, even though like I'm doing the thing like it now where I'm like fading myself and I'm like, you know, you go back and forth in your head. And
I do that too. I'll make picks, college football, and then I'll get to Friday and I'm like, I don't know. You get back and forth, and you're just kind of like, then you get to the game, and then you're like 10 minutes in, and you're like, well, I'm either on the right side or, oh, crap, I'm on the bad side. Hey, but what would have to happen for that dude to lose?
Something really bad would have to happen out of the gate.
17, we've never had a winner for 17, right?
No. And some people, they like see the bad juju, but they're also running a 20-horse gate this year. There's no auxiliary mm-hmm. gate, so it should be cleaner coming out. But, like, something disastrous would have to happen. Because, like, he ran – typically the Derby is the first time they run this far. He ran in the Travers at this distance a month ago and, like, just jogged the final – like, he didn't even run the final eighth of a mile, like, final furlong, and just cruised. And some of those horses are in this race. So, tis the law. He's a superstar. Don't take anything away from him. But it's just – it's not going to be the same this year, and it's kind of a bummer. But on the flip side, though, the Oaks has two badass fillies, and that's going to be a hell of a race. Gamine and Swiss Skydiver. Gamine's Baffert's horse that failed a drug test back in May.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Original Derby Day. And then Swiss Skydiver, she ran against the boys and came in second to the horse that was actually going to challenge Tislaw, the Scratch Day Art Collector. So, kind of a bummer, but, you know, it is what it is. This was Tislaw's race to win from the get-go.
Not surprised Bob Baffert getting his hands dirty.
Bob Baffert always – he just has that look about him. Yeah. I don't know if it's the glasses or if it's the white hair, the silver fox.
It's like the guy at church where you're like, yeah, he's a bookie or something. Something's going on there.
He's got like purple shades on.
Yeah, he's not paying his taxes or something. Something's going on there. Something fishy about that guy.
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to be enjoying quite a few mint juleps this weekend. Plenty of bourbon. I hope everybody has a safe and fun Kentucky Derby, even though it's strange. And we get to enjoy some football too. That's what's gonna be fun. Like, is we're gonna do, have man. Some football games going on. The Eastern Kentucky Colonels are gonna kick things off Saturday.
Lock in BYU Monday night.
Lock them up points. Against the Naval Academy.
Long as they're getting points, BYU is money as a real dog. Lock them up.
Oh, you heard it here first, folks. And that's how you win some money. You listen to 11 Personnel. We appreciate you hanging around a little bit longer this week. Have a very safe Labor Day. Enjoy the final days of summer and the first football games of the season. And we're just one step closer to Kentucky football. To be here before you know it.